Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll follow me over here. By the way, thank you for taking the Ron Van Dam studio tour. I really do appreciate it. Your $50 admission fee will go toward my foundation. And my foundation is going out to dinner and having a great time on you. Now, if you look over here, come on, gather around here. If you look over there, you'll see that, hey, don't crowd me. Don't crowd me. If you look over there, you'll see where Ron sits every day when he does his show, every weekday. That's the chair that he actually sits in. Isn't that amazing? Excuse me, ma'am? You want to go over and touch the chair? Yeah, go help yourself. Anyway, that's where he sits, and that's all the equipment that he uses when he's doing the show. Excuse me? Excuse me, ma'am? You want to what? You want to sniff the chair? That's disgusting!
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
Tour's over.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Get out of here. No refund.
Whatever.
Disgusting. Just disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Did you know that already?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
I know this by heart. You don't have to do it every day. Welcome to the program. How are you? I'm Ron Van Dam. Good to be with you today. Hope we're going to have a great time today. We both hope that. This is March 1st, the first day of March, which is redundant. This is a day where you fool people, you play jokes on them, practical jokes. What? No, I'm sorry, that's April 1st. I'm a month ahead of myself. Well, nobody expected March 1st to be a joke, but apparently Congress did. So-called President Trump gave an address to a Congress last night where he apparently seemed toned down. Toned down. And I've got to tell you, I don't believe it. It's a trick. I still don't agree with most of any of his policies. He's still a gigantic asshole. You know, you can be a certain way for an entire year, be the lowest common denominator of scum you can possibly find, and then you think you stand up in front of Congress all of a sudden, and you're somewhat nice. You think that's going to manipulate me? No, sir, not this guy, who has demonstrated to be the lowlife of the century. I'm sorry. But it's true to me. So let's move on. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on him because I don't think he wants to spend a whole lot of time on me unless he fat shames me or grabs my pussy. Okay, later on in the show today, we're going to talk about leadership, oddly enough, with Courtney Lynch. She's written a book about leadership, and it's an interesting social conversation that we're going to have a little bit later on in the show. I hope you're with me at that point and haven't gone out to get a sub or something like that. Have you heard about Subway? No, I'm not talking about Jared. He's in jail. I'm talking about each weekday, they have a different sub that you can get for like, I think it's $3. I don't even know if they still do that, but for a while they were doing that. And I would walk in there and say, give me one of your $3 subs. And I'd say, like, what is the sub for today? And they said, bread. I said, anything on it? And they said, no, that's just bread. You want lettuce on the bread? No. Okay, fine. What if I come in Wednesday? What's the sub of the day on Wednesday? It's all the deli meats that we didn't sell on Monday. That's what Wednesday is. We call it the Italian, not because it's disgusting, but because it's just full of meat, and I don't really know what else to call it. Okay, what if I came in on Friday and got one of your subs of the day? What is the Friday special sub for the incredibly low price? Friday, it's we put water on it. We sog it up, and we put water and cheese on it. I mean, of course, I'm exaggerating, but for some reason, whenever go into the place to get one of their special things for the special day, it's always something that I don't want to eat. Did you ever go into a restaurant? Let me tell you about our specials. Okay, all right, here are all the things that no one would possibly want. Why are they specials? We got to get rid of this shit. I mean, that's what. We got to throw it out if you don't eat it today, and this is why it's special to us. Wow, okay, fine. That's not every restaurant, obviously. I'm being very, very difficult today. It's March. You know that phrase about March. It comes in like a gerbil and goes out like an octopus. I don't know what it is. I guess March starts kind of cold and nasty, and it ends up kind of warmer and not so much as nasty. I think the two animals are involved would be the lion at the beginning and the lamb at the end, which a lion apparently is a ferocious, horrible creature that is very, very difficult to be with. And the lamb would be like a Bambi kind of, and Bambi was a deer, I realized that. But a lamb would be a soft little thing that you pet and you kill it and put a sweater on as a result. That's the lamb. April comes in like a whore and leaves like a whore. So that's what April is. And if your name is April, I think I owe you an apology. I was just joking. It's just a joke. Come on, get a break. Look at me. I got a question for you. I hope it's not too personal. What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
I was watching TV yesterday, which I kind of do every day. And I was watching a game show called Password Plus. Do you remember this game show? Alan Ludden was the host of this, the husband of Betty White. Betty's still around. Alan, not so much, sorry to say. I don't know what Alan actually did. He was a game show host, and I don't quite know what else he did, to be honest with you. He wasn't even a great game show host. I don't understand who he was or what his purpose was. When God put people on earth with purpose, they had a little splattering of people that kind of made no sense and were optional. Alan Ludden, I think, was one of those people. Anyway, he hosted Password way back, and then there was a Password Plus where they added a bonus round where people could get more money. I don't know. Anyway, I was watching this show. It was in color, so I think the year of it was kind of like 1970-something. But here's the interesting, it could have even been the early part of the 80s. Fashions back then were like someone was on lewds or something, or some type of mind-expanding drug. All the fashion industry was like crazy. Alan Ludden was wearing a shirt and a tie and a safari jacket. Where the hell are you going? Are you going to a formal animal hunt? What? It was the stupidest look ever. A safari jacket with a shirt and a tie underneath. It was like, wow. I couldn't believe what I was watching. It looked so horrible. And then I realized that at that time, the safari jacket was a very in thing. Very, very in. Men were wearing safari jackets, and so were women. I don't get it. Then I realized that there are some other fashions that were so bizarre. Do you remember for a while, and I don't remember what year it was, it might have even been in the 80s, where it was very cool to walk around wearing a hospital gown. Not the kind that opens in the back so you can see your crack and your butt and all that stuff, which is a very attractive garment, by the way. This would be like what a surgeon wears with the surgical mask, but people weren't wearing a surgical mask. They were wearing the surgical top, and they would go out to the supermarket. They weren't doctors. It was just something. You could buy it in the store, and you could wear it around as if you were a doctor. Just like people wear football jerseys now when they're out and about. You know, they got the number of their favorite quarterback or football star, whatever the case may be. I guess we were honoring doctors back then. We would walk around. We weren't doctors, but we wore doctor tops, surgeon tops. It was like, wow. And I look at that now, and it's like, wow. That's sick. That's weird. What were we doing? Then, back in the 60s, there was a fashion. There was a jacket that guys wore, and it was called the Nehru jacket. Do you know who Nehru is? Some of you don't. This was like some guy from the Far East, or the Middle East, or I don't know, India, wherever that thing is. It was a Nehru jacket, the kind of jacket that Nehru would wear. And if you don't know who he is, look it up in your encyclopedia, which you don't own anymore. It was the oddest looking thing, and everybody was wearing it. The Beatles kind of got that fashion going back in the 60s. Some very odd things were being worn back then. Very, very odd. People looked like they were like screwed up or something. Women back in the 70s were wearing what I always called horse pants. They were trousers, and I can't believe I said the word trousers. I don't think I've said that in like decades. They were pants. The waist of the pants was like right under the boob line. The belly button of the person was like way down inside the pants. These pants came like all the way up. They could have strangled you. I mean, your boobs just cleared the waistline. Women looked horrible. If you had any kind of ass whatsoever, you were walking around looking, you know, that horse thing where they have a guy playing the front of the horse and another guy playing the back of the horse? That's what women looked like all over the place. They were the most unflattering pants ever made. People looked horrible then. And the hairstyles. My women, what was with you? What was with you? Look at the hairstyles from like the 70s and into the 80s a little bit. If you were in the hairspray business, you made a fortune. Women used to puff volume up their hair to the point where it looked like they just stuck their finger in a light socket. And then they would actually freeze that look by putting hairspray on it. So you'd have these gigantic headed people and these tiny little faces inside. It was the most unflattering. I don't think anybody had sex during that period of time because everybody looked so horrible in their clothing and their big stiff hair. It was unbelievable. Now we're into more of a natural look. There was a look about, I'd say, 10, 15 years ago where women used to mess up their hair. It was the messy look. And that supposedly was attractive. The messier you looked, the more attractive you were. That was the rough look, I suppose. Now the look is not as disgusting, but is horribly deplorable. And that is where both men and women refuse to dress up anymore. Oh, there are plenty of fashions around and plenty of clothing that looks really good, but people don't wear them. They wear the ugliest, most comfortable. It's like, I'm going through life. I go to my job, I go shopping, I go out in public, but I am going to be comfortable. Screw you. I don't care how I look. I don't care what you think of me. Damn it, I am going to be comfortable. And that means I'm going to put on clothing that makes me look absolutely horrible. I'm going to have my jeans and like ripped all over the place. My t-shirt is going to have crap all over it. I'm going to look horrible. I don't care because I'm comfortable. I've got to be comfortable. As long as I'm comfortable, everything is fine. I've got to be comfortable. Is that what you're wearing? Remember? I remember that also from the... I don't think women say that to men as much anymore, but there was a time a few decades ago where women would constantly say to their boyfriends or husbands, are you wearing that? You're not wearing it, are you? Are you wearing that? They don't do that much anymore for some reason. Now it's like, I don't give a shit either.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
Oh, we're so lazy. So lazy.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast? It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
Let's do this. No hesitation there. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. We do this every single weekday. Thanks for coming aboard my large, huge boat. And good to see you, man. Oh, man, it's good to be with you. We're here on NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, RonVanDam.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and various podcast outlets all throughout the country, including some radio stations that actually have the balls to air this stuff. So, as long as I don't say balls to air this stuff, they will air it. Now that I've said it, now they won't. You know, I've never returned anything to the dollar store ever. Do you know why? Because it's too embarrassing. It's only a dollar. It's true. I've bought things that when I got home I didn't like them or it didn't work at the dollar store. But I never I'm too embarrassed to go back and say it cost me like $5 to drive here and gas. I want to return this dollar thing because that's how petty cheap I am. So it's like the people behind the counter at the dollar store would probably say, "You serious? You returning something that's only a dollar? What are you crazy?" Well, excuse me, your entire store is stuff that's only a dollar. Why do you even bother? Well, I know. It's true. I think the only reason we charge a dollar for all this stuff is so we can make a salary. Otherwise, this crap ain't worth anything, quite obviously. So I would never return anything to the dollar store. If I did, I would have to dress incognito or something so that they didn't... Oh, it's so embarrassing. Seriously? I wonder if there's a dollar store online where you would go online to the dollar store site and buy something for a dollar and then have it shipped to you. I don't think there is one. There shouldn't be. I don't know. If you worked in a dollar store, would you tell somebody that you did? I don't think so. I think I'd make things up. Like, I'm the president of a large corporation. Oh, that's very impressive. What do you do I work at a dollar store. I work at a dollar store. I think the people who work at the dollar store literally have no math skills because you don't have to. There's no price checks, nothing like that. You don't have to. Why don't they even bother ringing it up in the register? It's a dollar. We know it's a dollar. There's nothing ever on special or more than a dollar. It's just a dollar. It's just why don't they just stand there with a large cash box? The dollar store should be cash only. Then it would be worth it. Why would you even give them a credit card? That'll be $1.07, please, with tax.
You take Visa?
What?
You take Visa?
My God. It's embarrassing. Yet, I know tons of people that shop at the dollar store, and they're just like, I mean, I've talked about the dollar store a lot because it's a phenomenon. It's just, how long can it remain the dollar store? If inflation actually kicks in, how long can things just be a dollar in that store? Wouldn't there come a point where it's the $1.50 store or round it out to the $2 store? Someday there will be no more dollar stores. There can't be. Inflation would make that not feasible anymore. It used to be penny stocks. Do you remember that? No such thing. That's what they called penny stocks, but they were more than a penny. Maybe they should have a penny store. I don't know what you could possibly sell in it, but they should have one. It's so confusing. We're going to talk to our guest right now, Courtney Lynch. Hi, Courtney. How are you?
Ron.
How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Courtney Lynch joins us. She is one of the authors of Spark, How to Lead Yourself and Others to Greater Success. Now, you have an interesting background. Let's start there. Tell me about yourself.
Thanks, Ron, for the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. Yes, I think one of the most interesting things about my background is I am a former Marine, right? No such thing as an ex-Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine. And I think the unique fact of that is out of 180,000 Marines serving at any time, only about 1,000 of them are female Marine Corps officers. Mm-hmm. And so I had a unique leadership learning experience being a significant minority in an organization.
Now, something sparked you, get it? To write this book. What was that made you go on this path?
You know, it's interesting. While I was a significant minority in the Marine Corps, being in the military today is a minority role. Only about 1% of our population serves in the armed forces, even though they are the best leadership academy we have here in the United States. And once I got out of the military and into the private sector, I went to work at a software company straight from the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Myself and my co-authors, we were all having similar experiences, recognizing that the leadership lessons we learned in the military were extremely valuable to us in our private sector roles. And we were being promoted quickly. I mean, we're nice people and have great values, but we knew it was the leadership experience and acumen that was really making the difference for us, and we wanted to share that message with others.
So is partially the message that anybody can really be a leader if they go into that role?
I think it's the message that everybody needs to focus on leadership in some way, shape, or form, right? We have a lot of interesting ways of talking about leadership, especially in our kind of dynamic political climate today. And so I think it's about, you know, let's think about leadership from an everyday perspective, right? I mean, our world is volatile. It's uncertain. It's complex. There's a lot of ambiguity. And what can we do as individuals to add value to the world we're living in? And I think we really felt a sense of urgency to share our perspectives in Spark. And, you know, the markets responded well. It was a top 10 bestseller on the New York Times business list during the month of January. I think people are ready to say, hey, what can I do? How can I add value? Whether that's in their professional lives or civic engagement or even in their homes.
Yeah. You know, I believe there are two types of leaders. There are those that that create a vision and are able to assist people to reach that vision. There are others such as what I believe we might have in the White House now, where it's done for egotistical reasons so that one can feel a certain amount of power. Do you agree with that?
You know, it's interesting. I think you're spot on with your perspective, right? I think that a lot of times in society, we look at leadership as power, prestige, notoriety, ego, those things. Yet in reality, and what I learned in the military is leadership is all about responsibility. Mm-hmm. How do we step up, take responsibility? And so in our book, we don't talk about leadership from the power, prestige, notoriety perspective. And you know what? If people want to go after that, go for it. I think our book will still be valuable. Yet we focus on, you know, how does someone influence outcomes and inspire others, right? How do we seek to shape circumstances rather than being at the mercy of them? And how do we do that proverbial leading by example that is so important? So I really respect what you're saying, and I totally get it.
Yeah. Do you feel that there is a complacency involved in, I mean, is there a definite split between leaders and followers, where complacency falls into the followers category?
You know, I don't know if it's complacency or if it's just, you know, sometimes it's sheer exhaustion, right? The pace at which people are living their lives today, right? I mean, they have important responsibilities on the home front. They have important responsibilities at work. Mm-hmm. They want to contribute to society, right? I mean, it's hard to be focused in today's world. So I think some of it is, you know, even deeper than complacency. It's more just, you know, kind of an out of wit's end. What do I do? And I can relate. I've been there in seasons of my life. And I think it's, you know, a little bit of, I keep kind of coming back to that expression that was so popular years back of, you know, think globally, act locally. And, you know, I think we all want to be in a better world.
Yes.
Yet what are the things we do in our world? And we don't have to be on a big stage. We can, you know, we can lead from where we're at in so many ways.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, leaders that say, I know more than you do. In other words, that's why I bring up complacency is because people who are followers and become complacent about it, they rely on the leader to say, I know more than you do, I'm better than you do, I know the answer to everything. And then the follower says, good, because I don't have time for this, go, take the reins then. That's kind of dangerous.
Yeah. And I think, I think that is dangerous. And I think it's also very realistic, right? So, another reason why, I mean, just simple things we can do that where we can fight that complacency that, again, when you're in a tired state, sometimes seems like the much more attractive path.
Yeah, it does. Now, you outline seven different characteristics of an effective leader. I don't know if you want to go through them or maybe they should read the book.
Oh, well, hey, I'd love for folks to read our book. And if anyone wants to stay in touch with us, there's a lot of ways they can reach us. If they just want to send a simple text of the word Lead Star, that's my company's name, LEADSTAR, to 66866, they can get information on the book and stay in touch with us on a consistent basis. Yet I'm happy to go through them, right? Spark, our book, really is talking about a type of person, right? A spark is that person that knows that things can be better and wants to do their part. A spark can also be a moment where we realize, hey, you know, what I'm doing right now isn't working. How do I level up? How do I grow and expand as a person? And some of the traits we talk talk about are, you know, really understanding what you value, bringing credibility to the workplace and your life outside of work, the importance of accountability, the importance of a sense of service. And then we have other themes that really connect mm-hmm. to, you know, confidence and readiness and how can I as an individual make those decisions that matter. So yeah. The book really is multidimensional in its content, because that's what real true leadership is, right? A multidimensional way that we develop our character. And, you know, I was lucky. I got a great organization to do that with me and walk on that journey and certainly hold me accountable. Yet you don't have to serve in the military or, you know, hike 20 miles with a pack or, yeah. you know, be in some foreign land to be able to grow your leadership skills. I mean, if we just spend 10 or 15 minutes a week thinking about this skill set, it really does help take us to those places we want to go.
You know, it's interesting. In your press release here, it mentions the Million Women's March, million people participate in the Women's March on Washington, and many similar situations across the globe. And it's interesting because when I looked at these people, they weren't following a leader in order to make their points known. These were like a million leaders in themselves who were leading people in their own communities and decided to go to Washington or wherever it was. It was like a million leaders. Is that the proper way to look at it?
You know, I love that way of looking at it, right? Because, I mean, what was exciting to me about that march and that movement, and it continues to be a movement, was that it was people stepping up and engaging. Yeah. And, you know, my early career was in journalism, and I remember the principle of equal time, right? Even if I don't agree with someone's values or beliefs, I get excited by folks engaging in our democracy here. I think that's what our founding fathers envisioned and wanted, and that's, you know, through that inherent conflict, we become a better place. So I think the worst part is maybe that complacency you were talking about earlier when people don't engage. And so that's what, you know, as frustrating as the times can be for some, that is the underlying, you know, current of hope, the level of engagement that's happening.
Well, it's like anything else. If you don't speak up, you could be steamrolled and that's not a good thing.
Or it's not participatory, right? If people don't speak up, then voices aren't heard, and we don't really know what the best direction is, right? No one person can determine the best direction, right? I think the days of the lone wolf leader, if they ever existed, are absolutely gone now because of the complexity in our world today. So we need that variety of voices, and we need that push and pull to find the best way forward.
Courtney, what I like about the book is that it stimulates, and that's like, there's not a better thing than for someone to be stimulated by something and like a call to action in a sense. You start to look at yourself and see where you may be lacking and where you could be a better person. And I think that's what this book kind of does behind the scenes.
No, I appreciate that. We wanted it to be a catalyst. And what we're seeing too is we've put together interactive book clubs and just put the materials out there. And it's been amazing to see the organizations that are pulling on these book clubs. I mean, from GlaxoSmithKline, Wells Fargo, FedEx, Walmart, Target, right? I mean, these amazing organizations are reaching out to us and organically starting these book clubs. And all the information is at sparkslead.us. So get it, Sparks Lead Us, as we've been talking about, right? That's the website, and the book club materials are there. This book is designed to be read in community and to spark those conversations, whether those are inner dialogues with the individual reader or small team dialogues with folks that work together or serve together in a community organization. You know, we're just excited that it's getting out there and people are having a conversation about it. And that's what's important, right? Talking about leadership in everyday ways. So I truly appreciate it, Ron, that you see what we're trying to do here. Just give people some tried and true principles that have served veterans for years, yet are highly relevant to the private sector today.
Well, as we wrap up here, let's give the list of contacts again and, of course, the book itself.
No, thank you for that opportunity. If someone wants to text to us, the word LEADSTAR, all one word, LEADSTAR, to 66866. They'll get information on our weekly leadership moments, an excerpt from the book, and the book club study guide. Or if they just want to proactively get these materials on their own, they're welcome to visit us on the web at www.sparkslead.us.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your conversation today. Pleasure speaking to you, Courtney.
Great speaking with you, and thanks for the work you do on bringing this dialogue to the forefront. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You take care now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be back with more show right after these words.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructosey that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original barbecue or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's preserved piggy parts.
Tasty stuff. You know it. You feel it. You have it. You know it. You feel it. You have it. See me, feel me. Touch me. Touch me, feel me.
See me.
Feel me.
Feel me.
Touch me.
Touch me.
Feel me.
Heal me.
Heal me, see me, touch me.
See me.
Touch me.
Feel me.
Feel me, see me.
Touch me.
See me, feel me. Feel me, see me, feel me.
See me.
Touch me, feel me.
Feel me.
Heal me, seal me, touch me.
Touch me.
Feel me, see me.
Feel me.
See me.
See me.
Touch me.
Feel me.
Heal me, touch me.
Touch me.
See me, feel me.
Feel me.
You, I get the heat following you. I climb the mountain, I get excitement at your feet. Right behind you, I see the millions on you. I see the glory from you. I get opinions from you. I get the story.
See me. Feel me. Touch me. Heal me. See me, touch me. Feel me, heal me, touch me, see me. See me, touch me, feel me. Feel me, then touch me. Hey, see me? Touch me.
feel me? Touch me. Touch me. Damn it, touch me. Now feel me. There you go. That's what I wanted. Feel me, now touch me. Now feel me again, now touch me more. Now feel me more and touch me less. See me? Do you see me? Do you see me touching me? Feel me touching me. Teach me, touch me to feel me.
That's enough. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. Join me tomorrow, will you? Huh? Feel me? You want to touch me? Can you see me? Can you hear me? Feel me, touch me.
Whatever.